Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to the Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport, sponsored by Zwift, where fun is fast. We're here in Tokyo for the 2020 Olympic Games, talking all the events from cycling for the last few days, starting with my guest today, which is Orla Shinui.
Hello, Orla.
Hello, Bradley.
Yes. How are you finding the Olympics?
Oh, my God. Experience? Well, considering that we're getting about an average of half a night's sleep every night, absolutely loving it.
You seem to be, yeah.
I am, though. I'm having such fun. And do you know what's surprising is that I wasn't really expecting it, which sounds crazy because I give it the big up beforehand because you kind of have to. But I don't know. I think just all the chat pre-Olympics got to me a little bit, like with everyone, you know, and all you're thinking about is the logistics of getting here with COVID and quarantine and just how difficult it's going to be and how different it's going to be. And it took me, I don't know, maybe about half a day to get into it. And I'm just loving it so much. And the privilege of being here is starting to really hit home. Mm. I think once you start to see the medals and you see the action up close and you realise there are so few people who'll ever get to see any of these moments live in person.
Yeah.
It's been phenomenal. I can't even get my words out. And it's been great fun hanging out with you and Podcast Pete and all the gang.
I've been really... Daryl the Caraman.
It's been brilliant fun.
Started with the opening ceremony, didn't it? Which was...
Which is what?
Hard work, wasn't it? And boring. Yeah. But and then you had half an hour sleep that night and we were at the road race, weren't we?
Yeah.
Which was where we'll start. What did you make of the road race?
The road race, remind me now.
Because we had a crowd as well, didn't we?
We did, and that's what's been... we've been really lucky with the cycling, haven't we? Because we're outside of Tokyo, which means that we do get to have at least a maximum of 50% capacity, I think it is, with the crowd.
Yeah.
But the road race was phenomenal, wasn't it? It feels like a lifetime ago,
doesn't it? Yeah, and we had the women's race the next day, didn't we? But the men's race was obviously won by... Richard Carapaz,
which was,
I think, none of us expected that.
No.
And we should have done, really, I think, with having seen what he was like at the Tour de France. But all eyes were on Wout van Aert, weren't they?
Yeah, and Tadej Pogacar.
Who finished
maybe a bit of
third.
Roglic. We were talking Roglic beforehand. Don't forget, we're talking about the Belgians in general, I guess. But yeah, we had that sprint for second. We were going on air immediately afterwards and weren't entirely sure who'd won that sprint between van Aert and Pogacar.
No.
But yeah, it was a brilliant final.
And G crashed, Teo crashed again which was a shame to see, wasn't it? But I thought it was a brilliant race. And we saw more of it than I thought we would, actually, with them coming through with the laps at the end.
Yeah. I really like that.
Yeah.
We've been so spoiled with action that's so compact, and it feels like there have been so many intense moments of drama that it feels like the men's road race was 3 weeks ago. It feels like it was as long ago, at least, as the Tour de France, if not before.
Yeah.
And I don't really remember much more than all of that. You know, Geraint crashing and Teo crashing, and Geraint, of course, abandoned the race. And what was so lovely...
He got a round of applause, didn't he?
He did, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
The Japanese crowd have made me want to cry every day. They've been
people.
So respectful. Mm. They keep coming up to you. You keep reminding me how big a deal you are in Japan. And you are. You bloody are. It's brilliant.
It was great. And then, of course, we had the women's race.
The women's race, which was phenomenal, wasn't it? What did you make of that?
Well... the Dutch got it horribly wrong, and we bigged them up, didn't we, a lot before?
Everybody did. I think that's what went wrong with it,
because they were so dominant all season. But I tell you what I noticed more than anything, being on this side of the fence, not just the men's race, but for the first time I was able to watch the women's race. Mm-hmm. We've never really been able to see it. The last time I remember the importance of what the women's race meant, because you're so wrapped up in your own race, was being close to Lizzie when she got second in London.
Yeah.
And obviously we were all in the hotel and around the dinner table and stuff like that, and just the... she got beat by Marianne Vos there, and we did a piece for Eurosport last year, didn't we? A Zoom thing.
Listening
to her talk about freezing in the sprint and all that,
pouring
but still
with rain
being
that
happy
day.
To get a medal. And it's amazing to think that was 9 years ago, and how far she's come as an athlete. And obviously she was involved in the final there.
Yeah.
But the frustration of not almost trying to feed off the Dutch and everyone leaving the work to the Dutch was, I think, watching the disappointment, because she thought she'd won as well, didn't she, Van Vleuten?
Yeah, Van Vleuten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And her embarrassment in the interviews afterwards and not wanting to do them and things like that initially. But obviously we'll come to the time trial, but she made up for that certainly today, because we're doing this off the back of the time trials. But I think for the first time I realised the importance, maybe from my own victories in the Olympics, of just exactly what it means. Because I watched the ceremonies and the interviews after, and today more than ever the time trial struck me what it means, and as a spectator.
Do you know what was amazing about that race? And part of the reason that I don't remember an awful lot about the men's race is because it felt exciting at the time, but the women's race seemed, we had a hangover from the women's race for days afterwards. My timeline was crammed with discussion and debate about what went wrong, what it meant. We should say Anna Kiesenhofer, the Austrian, took the victory, a hugely surprising win. She was in the first break of the day, of course, and lasted all the way, did the last 41 kilometers solo, but everyone talking about whether the Dutch had disrespected her by underestimating her, I guess. And also there's an awful lot of debate as to whether the fact that it looked like Cecily Uttrup-Ludvig of Denmark was the only rider to congratulate Kiesenhofer afterwards. And there was a lot of debate, on my timeline at least, as to whether this was disrespectful by the Dutch and that they should have had the humility to go over and congratulate Kiesenhofer. But I don't know if that's just because Kiesenhofer she didn't have any teammates, so she was going to be by herself. And also, I feel like Annemiek van Vleuten thought she'd won. All her teammates thought she'd won. They're spending those 5 minutes afterwards getting their heads around the fact that they didn't and what went wrong.
And the disappointment,
Absolutely. What did you think of that debate? With the world watching and with everybody in the race still thinking that Annemiek van Vleuten had won.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I mean, look, no one knows what they'll do unless they're in that situation. Yeah. And seeing what it meant to van Vleuten today winning the time trial, it's a huge thing to just suddenly be told, no, you didn't win. And there's no radios. They weren't getting any time checks. So although they messed it up tactically, but I think the whole race left them to do the work.
Yeah. And they shouldn't have been the only ones. You know, if you're going to bring it back for a sprint, the Germans should have been working for Lisa Brennauer, for example. There are plenty of other teams with enough numbers.
But no, I just think that you get criticised for how you act in the moment, really. And, you know, I'm sure in hindsight, when they go back, they could, you know, probably do things differently. But, you know, you're acting on emotion in that moment and you don't always do the right thing because you're so consumed with yourself and having lost. And
well, you've got to be so consumed with yourself trying to win, aren't you?
Absolutely, yeah. Other than that, and then seeing the emotion of Lizzie afterwards.
You
know, she was just clearly frustrated and she didn't have any teammates, really. She had one teammate who did her job early on.
You know what I loved about that with Lizzie, though, is she smiled the whole way through her interview afterwards.
Yeah.
And she only learned she'd finished 11th because I told her. And she sort of almost pretended to thump the barrier in frustration, you know, I just finished outside the top 10. But her smile was so gracious. And I feel like we've really seen her grow so much as an athlete and as a person. And I do hesitate to say this because there are enough fathers in the peloton and I think we talk about it more now than we used to, but specifically with Lizzie, I think motherhood seems to have changed her. Maybe marriage has changed her, whatever, I don't know, but it feels like she's got such a perspective outside of cycling that has given her a joy within cycling, and that is a lovely, lovely thing to see, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's hard to do that.
And I don't think she enjoyed Rio either, did she?
Yeah, she can't have done.
So I think that it was almost like coming back here, she almost needed it for herself as well, I think.
And that perspective, though, did you think you ever had that while you were racing?
No.
You know, anything outside of cycling?
No. And I think that's what, obviously jumping ahead here, that's what Tom Dumoulin gave in his interview today, was he now has perspective. And when he said he had a really great time and picked up on that, obviously he doesn't mean he was going out getting drunk and enjoyed himself, because he was clearly still riding his bike. But he had to find who Tom Dumoulin was and find out what he wanted to do in life and things like that. And I thought it was a really heartwarming interview that today.
Because we ended up talking an awful lot and we are maybe jumping ahead of ourselves, but we talked a lot about athlete welfare and that. And I just wonder, do you think he would have ever benefited from that, from maybe taking a break and having someone say, you know what, this isn't everything. You'll still be able to win if you take a step back from it.
2012, definitely, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think having, if I'd had a breather more at the start of 2013, but like Tom said today, the pressure was on to constantly chase results and winning was the standard. And if you're not able to, then someone else is always willing to step up. But yeah, it was interesting what Lizzie said and what Tom said, actually. Let's just go back to Lizzie, because I think we've got her interview now, which we'll play.
You go through so much to even get to the start line here. Does all of that sacrifice, all the time away from Orla, from Phil, does it feel worth it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just been a long month, but it's good. I'm going home now.
A long month and a long year, Lizzie. It's not been the easiest.
No, it hasn't, but, you know, that's sport, and I've enjoyed getting here, so I'm really proud of the... I'm proud of my husband, proud of him for letting me chase my dream, and, yeah, happy.
And you know Orla will be watching at home as well, cheering Mummy on.
I think she might be more interested in her breakfast. But that's good, that's how we like it.
Thanks very much, Lizzie. Best of luck.
Yeah, and that's the interview you were mentioning, Orla. I mean, she actually got tears out of her, didn't you?
Yeah, so cynically, I didn't get tears out of her. She was emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
Because you humanised it, because as soon as you mentioned Phil and her daughter...
Yeah.
I think that's the perspective we're talking about.
And I think that's so much of what we're here to do, though, is to humanise it, because that's... I mean, you've said it to me so many times. So many different things have happened, and you said, that's it right there. That's the Olympics. Mm. That's what this is about.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of them, is an athlete spending time away from home, sacrificing everything. I mean, not sacrificing everything. They love it. You know, it's a privilege. They do it because they love it. But going through those hard times, and we only see them in that tiny little platform for maybe 3 minutes, and I feel it does them a disservice to only ask them about their result or ask them about their performance, because it's not about that. It's about everything that's taken them this far. And that's what humanises it. And that essentially is what sport's about, isn't it?
Well, we've seen it so many times, or I have this year anyway, in the interviews.
Mm.
We saw it with Rowan Dennis today. We saw it with Tom Dumoulin. We saw it with the two refugees that we saw today, which really does give perspective. When we were at the mountain bike, we saw it with Yolanda Neef, who won. And 2 years ago, she was, you know, on her deathbed, having had a really bad accident. And you see what it means to them to come back from that. This is almost like a life thing for them. It's not just about winning gold. It's about a journey they've been on. And I've seen that more than ever this year. And I don't know if that rhetoric has always been there, or I'm just noticing it for the first time being on this side of the fence.
That's what I wanted to ask you. Has that surprised you? Because for me, this is what I love about sport. It's why I became a sports journalist, because I love all of those stories, and I love the connection that we all get from them, because we all see a part of ourselves in one of those stories. But for you, you'll have been so focused on your own performance and your team performance. Are you surprised by that level of emotion and that level of humanity involved in this side of it?
Not surprised, I just realised that we're all the same.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because you think you're on your own.
Yeah.
And seeing the likes of Rowan Dennis, who I'd known for a long time, who's, I wouldn't say he's cocky, I think he gets tags and labelled wrong, but I saw a different side to him today in his most sort of vulnerable moment, and how grateful and how gracious and how humbled he was to have taken the medal. And it tells you the journey he's been on with that. It wasn't necessarily about winning. And Tom Dumoulin was the same. Mm-hmm. He said a medal of any colour was winning today for him. So, yeah, I've definitely noticed it more. But
you said a few times as well, you wanted to put your arms around different people. You wanted to give G a hug.
Yeah, because G was, you know, when he watched him in that vulnerable state afterwards, talking about getting home, back to his family and back to Sarah. And, you know, it was lovely. It really was. And, yeah, let's hear G's interview now.
What happened, first of all?
So we were just going down a fast bit of road. There's a little metal thing in the middle, and Teo hit that and just lost his front wheel, and I was directly behind him, and, yeah, just nowhere to go. So I was just... I could have tried to land on top of him. It would have softened my blow. But, yeah, we were both on the deck, and, yeah, really unfortunate. Just a freak accident.
When you hit the ground, did you know that that was maybe your race over?
Yeah, it was... We were going pretty quick and kind of knew that I knew that I wasn't bad, like broken something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when you hit the floor at that sort of speed, it's never nice. And I was on the same side as my shoulder when I did it in the tour. So luckily it stayed in. But just all the muscles and that were pretty tight and spasm. And yeah, knocked myself about a bit, just a normal crash. But it's just disappointing, you know. Like, I think after the tour and everything, just looking to come here and, you know, change the scene and, you know, with the GB team, and just really motivated to try and get something out of it. And so, yeah, for that to happen, I was just sat on the floor just thinking, why? What have I done in a previous life, you know? But
it's been a really hard couple of weeks, hasn't it? I mean, really hard, even by your standards, I guess.
Yeah, I think purely because of just so much time away from home as well, and all the sacrifices you make. And you know, it was an 11-week block where I only saw my son and my wife for like 4 days, you know, and it's a lot of commitment. And, you know, the diet and everything, like, you know, let's face it, I don't enjoy eating rice and and chicken, and, you know, missing out on all, you know, social occasions back home, and just a few, just normal few beers with everyone. But okay, this year has been a bit different anyway, for obvious reasons. But yeah, it's just it's been tough mentally, but you know, still got one more chance on Wednesday with the TT. So yeah, just rest up now and hopefully get something out of that.
When it all pays off, those sacrifices, it's easy to say that they're worth it. When it doesn't pay off, how does that all feel?
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, it's not that I've had a bad season, you know. I've won two races and, you know, I've been up there on the podium a few other times as well as that. But the main two targets is, you know, what you dream about, and they're the ones that sort of ended up on the floor. So, it's, yeah, it is tough. And but, you know, it is part of the sport, like life in general as well. You know, you don't always get what you deserve, but you just need to keep trying. So,
I remember speaking to you in Rio, and it was a day, maybe 2 days after you crashed in the road race then, and I remember how disappointed you were, obviously. How does this compare to that?
I think that one was disappointing because I was there in the mix, you know, the medal was there, you know, it was 10k to the finish, and you know, I was in with a chance of winning at least a podium, so that was hard. This one, yeah, I think because there's nothing I could do about it. I don't know if that softens the blow or makes it worse. I don't know. Head's all over the place in a minute, but it's just, I think after the tour, the way that went as well, it's just kind of, I was sat on the floor just thinking, what is going on? Like, why? But as I say, that's how it goes sometimes.
How do you pick yourself up from that mentally now, in a practical sense? Do you go and call home? Do you go and switch off? Do you go and watch movies? How do you turn your head around on all of this?
I'll definitely ring my wife and I'll speak to my son for maybe 10 seconds before he runs off and doesn't really care. And then that puts it all in perspective, you know. So, and yeah, but definitely tonight, switch off completely and forget about bike racing and, you know, power and this and that and whatever. Then get up tomorrow and yeah, just try and recover as best I can, and all in for Wednesday.
And just finally, I can see some blood still on your the back of your elbow, but you've been checked out and everything's okay then, is it?
Yeah, it's all good. Just like landed awkward, did something to my ankle, so it's a bit of a pain to walk, but it's all right riding, so that's all right. And yeah, just the back is just a bit beaten up, but nothing the physios and the masseurs can't help.
One more push, Geraint.
One more push, just at least stay on the bike, is it?
Best of luck. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Cheers.
So that was shortly after he'd climbed off there, G, and he'd crashed that day, and you got that interview with him. But he was quite reflective, G, and quite sort of...
quite honest, I thought.
Yeah, not necessarily feeling sorry for himself, but he was kind of questioning, you know, why always me, you know?
And this is a question we always ask of him. And that's why it broke my heart hearing him say that, because, like, I've asked him this so many times before, or it feels like it. Maybe I've not actually vocalised it a lot, but I have asked him about his falling and how he has so much bad luck, and he doesn't have an explanation for it. But to hear him say, sitting on the ground in an Olympic road race, saying, why me? That's tragic. That really breaks my heart. It's really lonely, isn't it?
But straight away, he was focused onto the time trial then, wasn't he? And he does pick himself up, G, time and time and time again, which was what makes him a great athlete. But yeah, it was really nice to see all those interviews and see the reaction of those, because I've never seen that before.
And you know what I really like
as well?
It's so
different to the tour.
Yeah.
Because in the tour,
just done
we
that.
Very rarely get those human ones. It's always about the race and tomorrow. But the Olympics, for some reason, it brings out a different side to people.
Because it's all or nothing. Yeah. You called it do or die earlier. That's what it feels like, I guess, for the guys.
Yeah. And even Teo today, when we was listening to him, and that's been the most eye-opening thing for me, is watching the interviews.
Brad, we're sponsored by Zwift, the cycling app where fun is fast but also unlocks performance. I'm a big fan getting on there with the boys, David and Stephen, as you know.
Yeah.
I've been exploring a few of the training plans.
Oh yeah, tell me about it.
Well, training plans on Zwift help you improve every single time. I'm currently on board with G's training plan. Geraint Thomas, fun is flying uphill.
I bet that's a tough one.
It's not easy. This workout focuses on improving your muscular endurance, a pillar of any great time trialist like you, Brad, mountain climber or stage racer, to help you deal with hard surges and improve your ability to fly uphill.
Well, that's quite good, Graham. Is that, and do you find it's helping you improve?
Helps you improve just because it's so easy to use. And if you want to find out just how simple that is, there's a special offer, a 7-day free trial. Find out more, download the app today.
I've loved as well seeing all the riders react to you being there. Yeah. Because this is your, I mean, I keep forgetting because I've worked with you now for a couple of years on this side of it. But this is your first Olympic Games where you're not competing in 21 years. So for all these guys, they've grown up seeing you competing and winning and being their hero. And that's not to overplay things at all.
Well, my first Olympic Games, Remco was 7 months old.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he was born on the 25th of January 2000.
Do you think he remembers watching you in Athens, Bradley?
Yeah, he told me he did. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to think that, isn't it?
But what is that like for you, though? Because I feel like sometimes it's maybe a bit awkward for you as well, because you're there as a journalist or a broadcaster, however you want to term it.
But you're
also dealing with... What's that?
Not a journalist.
Not a journalist, sorry. That's a dirty word for you. Not for me. But you're trying to have this different persona, and you do. Mm. But you've got all these athletes who are also hero worshipping you, and it's a funny dynamic. I think
it is funny.
It's lovely.
But it also
lovely
brings
to see.
Out a different interview.
Yeah, absolutely.
And particularly with Teo today, you know, in the time trial, he was almost embarrassed
of
his performance, which I felt really sad for him because he's a great athlete. And but some of them I just couldn't do, like the G in that one. Yeah. I couldn't do it.
Well, because for Teo, he moved on to Jill Douglas from the BBC afterwards, and he gave a much more standard interview. I don't mean that in a bad way.
I know it was
more he squared his shoulders and he stood up tall and he assessed his performance. Yeah. With you, it was almost like, and I hope he doesn't take this in a disrespectful way. It's not meant like that at all. It's endearing. Mm. With you, he was almost like this little boy, and as you say, it was almost like he felt embarrassed to be talking about that performance, and he struggled to make eye contact with you, and he was almost whispering to begin with.
I know.
And you came away from that, I think, and you thought, oh well, I didn't do a very good interview, or it wasn't a very good interview, but it was absolutely fascinating to see that, because I've never seen Teo like that before.
No. And we had a similar thing at the mountain bike. Me and Pete went to the mountain bike, and it was great. And obviously, interviewing Tom, he rode for my team, Tom. Mm. But to watch his performance way above his years, 21.
21.
But as soon as we interviewed him, he was like a little kid. It was lovely
to see.
Well,
because you're the boss. You were the boss as well as the hero.
He was really humanised and just lovely. It was a lovely thing. And particularly with the women's mountain bike, it was great as well watching Evie. She was just so animated, and she
came back totally in love with Evie Richards, didn't you? In a lovely way.
Yeah,
you were bigging her up,
was great.
She's just so adorable.
I just thought, again, it was another thing as what the Olympics. She was just so happy to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Yolanda.
Yeah.
As soon as she saw it was me, she said, "Oh, I watch you on GCN and all this and this." But it was great. It really was.
What I really liked about Tom Pidcock's interview with you was that you were doing the classic thing, I guess, that we all do, where you're saying, okay, well, I've heard this from Dave Brailsford, this is his plan for you. Mm. And he turned it round, didn't he? And really
straight
impressed
away,
you with his answer.
He told me what he wants to do for the next 3 years. And I thought straight away, that's someone who knows where he's going in the sport. And that was off the back of saying that he's the next Tour de France project. Yeah. And most people go, wow, I don't know. But Tom was like, well, I want to do the Worlds next year. And then I want to come back to the next Olympics. And he's not thinking of the Tour yet. He's got it all set out. Very rare you meet an athlete like that.
At that age.
Yeah. So, let's listen to Tom's interview now, actually. Let's play that. Right, Tom.
Hello again.
Olympic champion. Is it sunk in a bit more now?
No. I think I'm going to have to, this medal's pretty heavy. It's a good quality one.
I mean, you're probably justified now, isn't it, in sacrificing most of your road season for this.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah, for sure. I think it was, yeah, I worked bloody hard coming back from injury and, yeah, and getting ready for this. And I think, yeah, everything just seemed to fall into place today. Yeah, I think it's, yeah, big relief it's kind of over, because it is stressful, but, you know, it's never feel anything like we're winning an Olympic title, I think.
Was you aware that Van der Poel had crashed when you were out there?
I was right behind him.
Yeah, and after that, what point did you feel like you've got this in the bag? Did it look like a wearing down process with the two Swiss guys?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the heat, it's not really... I mean, you saw it in the road race. No one really just kind of, you know, explodes forwards. A lot of people explode backwards. So, yeah, it was kind of wearing down, and a lot of people were making mistakes. And I was like, right, I just need to get to the front. And I pressed on, I got a bit of a gap, and Flucky was holding me for a few laps and kind of putting me under pressure. But I kind of backed off a little bit. You know, it's easy to... I didn't want to overcook myself. And it was, you know, still, you know, anything can happen in the last couple of laps. So, and then the gap kind of grew a little bit, even though I was backing off. And then I kind of knew, like, I got it in the bag if I keep it together.
Brailsford said to me at the Tour that you're his next project for the Tour de France. So can you see yourself coming back and defending this title, or will that be it now for mountain bike?
Well, next year I want to go to the Worlds, for sure. I think the Worlds mountain bike, that is.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then the next Olympics, I want to do road and mountain bike and TT as well if they want me. So.
Brilliant. Well, Tom, enjoy the moment, mate. Congratulations, thank Olympic you very champion. Much. Yeah, so there you go. You see what I mean about someone who knows what they want to do with their life.
And what I love about his answers was that you had said to him, right, okay, here's your team boss's project for you going forward. He's the man who pays your wages. Every project that he has in his list is away from the trade team.
Yeah, which is a very...
But he can do that, can't he, with that kind of a talent?
Tom is his own team.
Yeah,
and he always
has
been. And the first person he hugged was someone in an Irish tracksuit, which is Kurt Bogarts, who's been his personal DS at the Trinity Racing Team. And it's very separate to the Ineos thing. But Tom's always been like that, and which what makes him so successful is that individual-minded, not selfish at all. People that would get brandished around. But Tom, he knows where he's going in the sport. For someone at such a young age, he's got such an old head on him.
So I missed the mountain biking because the vagaries of an Olympic Games means you can be dispatched anywhere. I was at the canoeing and the gymnastics, but I was following the mountain biking on Twitter ferociously. The men's race, first of all, sounded phenomenal.
Yeah, it was some Van der Poel crashing.
Yeah. And what happened? What went wrong, do you think?
Well, there's some talk about them having removed a board or something that he didn't know about, but apparently they were all told about. I just think it was actually really heartbreaking to watch him lying on the floor. He went down heavy, and watching the Dutch journalists that were all amassing there, expecting a gold medal.
That pressure at such a young age again.
And he went straight off to hospital, so he didn't do any media afterwards. But I felt for him, and it just shows you, like, one person's misfortune was another person's. And Tom was behind him when he crashed. And Tom realised a lot of people were making mistakes. And in that reference of, you know, lots of people making mistakes, I think maybe he was referring to I was going to nearly call him Adri then, but it's Matthew. But no, Tom, and that's what I mean about someone who's riding with a very mature head on their shoulders, is he's able to make decisions like that on the road. And he said he didn't feel good either. So it just shows
Tom.
You. Yeah.
Wow.
He said, I didn't feel great all day. Amazing, amazing performance. And then the women's race was even more spectacular because it had been raining overnight, so the conditions were very slippy, and the Swiss girls were phenomenal. And so Yolanda, she 2 years ago, she had a horrific accident, life-threatening. Her last race was the test event 18 months ago. She broke her wrist 6 weeks ago before this race.
When you said that to me on the bus this morning, I was thinking, if I broke my wrist 6 weeks ago, I'd still be getting somebody to open the jar of pickles for me. Never mind doing an Olympic final mountain bike.
So, I mean, and to watch that again, her journey, she was bawling her eyes out the whole way through the presentation. And she only stopped crying when she saw me.
At least it wasn't the other way around.
No.
That would have been worrying.
No. Yeah, no, it's just great. Great to see them become so human. Now, watching these extreme, like, sort of gladiatorial performances, and then they're so humanised in the interviews after. It's great. It really is.
Do you know what I've really enjoyed as well about watching your reaction to things is that I think you expected the men's racing to be exciting and to be fired up by it. And I don't think, and this isn't a reflection on your interest in women's cycling, but it's just whether you have the opportunity to watch it or not. Mm. I'm not sure if you expected to be as excited by the women's racing as you have been. Your eyes have been coming to life when you talk about it.
Yeah, because I've never been able to witness it or watch it. You never pay an interest in any other race when you're in the pit with everyone. And I'm already looking forward to the track racing and watching like Laura Trott, you know, because by the time Laura was always racing, or sorry, Laura Kenny, we were always back on the plane flying off somewhere. And you don't actually get to watch as closely, and we have to watch now because we've got to ask questions afterwards. And I didn't realise just how much I enjoyed it and just how, if anything, it's better than the men's racing. Because there's an expectation with the men's, and there's a form guide.
Yeah.
And maybe it's something to do with the fact that it's not covered as much as well. So.
And I think as well, it's less professional. So that means there is less of a formula. There's less control. It's just a different format of racing, really. Mm. Certainly in the road racing, because we don't have the strength and depths of teams that we do in the men's racing, it has to be more attacking. It is more dynamic, and it is a case of anything can happen.
Mm. And Loanne LeConte was the clear favourite for the men's for the women's mountain bike. She'd led every race, every lap of every race she'd done this year. It was the clear favourite. She was leading at one point and had a technical problem and fell off, which led to the Swiss dominance afterwards. So it just shows you that one race every 4 years and you only get one shot at it. And that was the great thing with Evie. She said that my eyes are already on Paris in 3 years. And it's great to see that sort of focus from these people, from these athletes. And that's the great thing with the Olympics is you know what you want to do with your life for the next 4 years.
And I guess that's why this has been so hard, because you plan for the 4 years and then that fourth year has been extended by a whole year, and that uncertainty must be unbelievable.
And who knows what's going to happen in the next 3 years?
Yeah.
I mean,
I know, we keep thinking it's over, don't we?
We do. And if it's in France, France has been the worst hit, hasn't it? So, it's very, very interesting.
What about the time trial?
Well, the time trial, again, the thing that struck me the most, or the thing I carry from the most from watching the women's time trial this morning was just how much it meant to Van Vleuten.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point she ran from the hot seat right down to the Dutch media when I don't think she was supposed to to gesticulate to the camera or something back home. And she couldn't hide her joy. Mm. And she'd been on the floor in the road race. She thought she'd won the road race.
And this goes back to Rio as well.
There's
of course,
a,
when she was on
backstory.
Course for gold and she'd crashed in the final descent into Copacabana.
Yeah, I mean, and to watch her do that, and what it meant to her, the sheer joy, and she wasn't self-conscious, no self-awareness. She was celebrating in that moment.
That was funny to see, wasn't it? Because sometimes you get athletes being a little bit self-conscious and not knowing what to do. Mm. She was playing to the camera. She wanted to put on display just how much this meant to her.
Absolutely.
That was quite lovely to see, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. And to watch it, what it means to the personnel and the staff around. Mm. I hadn't seen that side of it. Is that just what it means to the people that fix the bikes, massage, all those things? Because again, you don't. You're so wrapped up in your own world. You think it's all about you.
Yeah.
And that's been really, really good to see. And she was dominant today. I mean, she
won by almost a minute.
Yeah. As
phenomenal.
Did Primož Roglič in the men's race.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which again, that was chopping and changing all the time. But Ganna fell away towards the end. Roglič was in control from the start. Yeah, there's so many different stories, which started earlier on in the day, and going back to the women's, actually, was watching the interview of the young refugee girl.
Yeah, yeah.
Which had us all quite emotional, didn't it? You talk about perspective. I mean, her story really does put everything into perspective, and how eloquent she spoke, how powerful she spoke, but how frail and how vulnerable she was at the same time. But so together and with it, both of them, actually, both the refugees that gave interviews today, it wasn't about the result. I couldn't even tell you where they got, but it was just about their presence and what they were there for.
Yeah, her name's Masoma Ali Zada, an Afghan refugee living in France. And I got to ask her a little bit about her story afterwards. And she was saying how, you know, she wanted to send this message back to all girls and women in Afghanistan, where riding a bike is still a political statement, and it's a dangerous political statement. And the Taliban are gaining ground there. And to be able to send that message to them, the first woman from her country.
She's never run a time trial.
This is phenomenal. Mm. She never run a time trial before. Her first time trial was the Olympics.
As a teenager training in Kabul, she would quite often sometimes get hit or pelted by stones by men shocked to see her unaccompanied on the streets on a bicycle, which is, you can't imagine, can you?
We can't, though. We can't fathom it. And we were saying, this is the silly thing, isn't it? I started this podcast saying how we're living off half a night's sleep every night, blah, blah, blah. And we'd arrived at the venue and it's an hour and a half, 2 hours drive there and back again. And you guys have spent long, long days in the car getting out to the mountain bike. And we arrived there and we'd no sandwiches, did we? We'd no for lunch. We only had these like crappy little salads in the bag.
The cameraman was moaning because he only had an apple.
And had no coffee. And we were all having a bit of a self-indulgent moan, weren't we? And then we go down and we speak to her. And we all had a word with ourselves and we're like, guys, my life, she's come through so much to make it to this start and finish line. Mm. I think we can manage without a sandwich for a day. You know, it's one of those times that you said that is what the Olympics is about. And it's about reminding us.
And let's listen to that interview.
Massima, how was that? How was the time trial?
It was so good because it was my first time to do a time trial. It was first time for me in my life to do time trial because I prepared for the long distance. But the last minute we decided to do a time trial. So I didn't have any experience, but it was so good. I love it. And because I said to myself, I already I'm a winner. A winner for those who think that women don't have right to ride bike. I'm winner because I participate in the Olympic Games, so I winner against them. So I'm so happy with my race. The most important is participating as a cyclist, as an Afghan woman, that I live in a country that some people think to want to limit the right of women. So I'm here and I'm so proud to present for the right of women, for the Afghan people, Afghan women. It was so excited for me to be here, to participate in the Olympic Games, and for the first time trail in my life.
How much does it mean to you to be able to send a message to girls back home, to women back home, about being able to ride your bike?
My message is for the people who think that women don't have ride bike, or they think that women are feeble or cannot do the hard things, or they want to limit the women. My message most for them to a strong answer to them that they cannot limit the right of women. If I could arrive to Olympic Games, if today I'm here for participating in the Olympic Games, so it means that women are strong. They can do whatever they want, and they don't need the people who to give them their rights. If you don't give our rights, we will fight to give them.
Massima, can you tell me how you came to be a part of the refugee team? What's your journey been like to come to Tokyo?
I started cycling in Afghanistan, but I obliged to leave Afghanistan because of the problem of security and other problems. So I came to France. I am a refugee in France. I continue to do cycling in France. And I continue because participating in the Olympic Games is not easy. We have to train hard, we have to be professional, we have need to do a lot of sacrifice. It was my dream, but I thought that it's not possible because it's so hard. But I continue to dreaming, to work, to continue to cycling. And today I'm here. it's something incredible that I cannot believe it. But I'm here. And I have to say myself that it's reality. It's difficult for me to believe it, but I continue to ride it, I continue to work it, and I continue to dream it. And now I realize that nothing is not impossible. We have to work for that.
Just very quickly, how important is it to have a refugee team here?
Yeah, it's so important. I wanted to represent my country, but as a refugee, I couldn't represent my country. But I'm so happy to present the refugee Olympic team because 82 million people, I send them message of hope, message of peace, because they left their country because of different reasons. And they are a new country, new culture, new people, all the things are new. So I send them a message of hope. To work hard, to study, to do a sport, and to send a positive message for others, and to be useful in the new country that they are living.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Congratulations.
Yeah, very emotional stuff there. And then obviously we had a second refugee that was in the men's race, who again, you'd met you before, and he said hello again.
Yeah, I met him at the Innsbruck World Championships, which is what, 2019, I can't remember now, a few years ago. And I couldn't believe he remembered me with a face mask and everything. He was as humble and as beautiful a soul as I remember. A Syrian refugee, he fled, I think some 10 years ago now, when violence got really bad. I think his family fled first and he stayed on to continue cycling and then had to make his way across Turkey. And he lives in Switzerland now. But when I asked him where his family were all watching from, he said they're in Turkey, they're in Aleppo, they're all over the place, his family all displaced. But when I spoke to him in Innsbruck, he'd said to me his dream was to compete at the Olympic Games. Yeah. And that was his dream today. It was really, really beautiful.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Lacquer's collective cover is made especially for cyclists. This is bicycle insurance made for everyone, from Grand Tour winners to cyclists hitting the pedals for the first time. Lacquer has transformed traditional insurance with no more fixed upfront premiums. Instead, your monthly contributions are based on the collective's claims that month, meaning you could pay nothing if nobody claims. Your max monthly price is capped, but the savings are all yours. Claims are handled by Lacquer's team of cycling experts and usually agreed within a day, with no depreciation or excess. The Bradley Wiggin Show listeners can get their first 30 days free. Head over to www.lacquer.co and sign up using the code Wiggins.
Primoz was dominant today, again, and to see him climb off at the Tour when he did and go home, I don't think any of expected to see him here still.
But Bradley, what did you make of his race? Because for me, it was absolutely fascinating, because at one stage it looked like he was in a three-man breakaway in a road race.
Yeah, well, he caught Casper Asgreen, but Primoz was executing his effort on the parts of the course that he could make time up. And he just caught Casper at the top of the small rise before they descended down, before they came onto the race circuit. And then you had to climb up to the race circuit. And I watched him very carefully. He clearly made his effort to the top of the climb, caught Casper Asgreen. Then he sort of just soft-pedaled down the climb.
And Asgreen
caught him back and went straight through him. And that's the distribution of where you distribute the power through the course, is where you're going to make the most time up. And he didn't panic. He was taking a drink. He even took time to put the bottle back into the... Because the bottle is part of the frame. So the aero gains that you'll make by keeping the bottle, it came onto the circuit and then he climbed up back up to the circuit and, you know, he won by a minute. It was amazing. But we were watching him closely. We were watching Tom Dumoulin, who you were getting quite, you know, energetic about because of his story and where he's come from. And to watch his interview afterwards, Primoz was very poker-faced, wasn't he? You wouldn't have
much
thought
much more so than after the road race, I thought.
But Tom, I thought, was very composed, eloquent in what he said. Mm-hmm. His English is perfect.
Yeah.
And the words he was using, I'll never forget things like, you know, I had to take a helicopter view of my life. And to say something like that in as a Dutchman.
Yeah, yeah.
It's beautiful.
You know what I really liked about his interview as well was that we've talked a lot about mental health at these games, haven't we? And Simone Biles, the gymnast, withdrew from the team competition, then the all-around competition, and she's been talking about mental health issues. And so not that I had to ask Tom Dumoulin about it, but it felt relevant and I would have done anyway. But I like how he said, you know, he wasn't trying to send a message to anyone. He's not trying to stand on a platform. It's his life. He's living it his way. He can only hope that other people make the decisions that are relevant to them, that are best for them. And I thought that was really gracious and intelligent, actually, because it becomes quite trite, doesn't it? If we all jump on the same platform, it almost becomes meaningless.
He looks very content with himself.
Yeah, and happy.
And measured. And I saw him eating a flapjack before he gave the interview to the BBC.
Yeah.
You know, just little things like that.
Why did you notice that? I find that really intriguing. Why did you notice that?
Because he finished eating his flapjack, washed his mouth out, and then gave the interview. It was about Tom, I'm eating this. Uh-huh. You know, and it was everything he did, even the way he walked, he was walking slower than everyone else. It's like, I'm doing everything at my pace.
Way.
This is about me.
Yeah.
And I thought it was beautiful. And even Rowan Dennis came along, and Rowan, I've never seen him as humble as that. Mm. It was, and he had a story to tell about, you know, being a father, and everyone had a story.
Yeah.
And it was great to see that, because you don't normally see that, win or lose, as an athlete. Everyone else has gone off. Everyone who came through today, whether it was Nico Roach, whether it was the refugees, whether it was Geraint, everyone had a story to tell. And everyone was quite reflective, and you were living that emotion with them. I had to stand back a little bit because I didn't want to sort of smother their emotion at that point.
How much of that do you think is the difficult, excruciatingly difficult sometimes period that we've been through? Do you think it's made everyone a bit more reflective in their interviews? Because I do think, and maybe it's because my questions are more reflective of that anyway, because I'm more interested in the humanity of what everyone's been through. But I don't remember people talking about their families and their loved ones and the sacrifices and the people that have helped them get this far in quite so emotional a way before.
I think it's the jersey you pull on.
Really?
It takes away the team element and the contracts, and I'm just doing my job for a contract next year and I've done what I've been asked to do. Your national jersey is the pride thing, and everything else goes out the window, and you're representing your country.
And that's your childhood dream, isn't it?
And I think it humanises everyone. That's what the Olympics is about. And I've probably the first time in 21 years I've realised that. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Does that make you in any way look back on your Olympic career and the way you did your post-race interviews or contained your emotions or conducted yourself, or... would you do it any differently if you were your version of Sir Bradley Wiggins now competing at an Olympics?
No, because I think all it did is, it just reminds me more so than ever of the one Olympic gold that I treasure the most, which was London.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to Colin Murray after I won in London that's it, it will never get any better than this. Yeah. I think I remember giving an interview afterwards where I was talking about the military that were helping out in London. And I met a serviceman the night before I won at the hotel, and he gave me one of his coins that they carry in their belts in case they get captured. And wow. They've got gold coins that they give to their captors. And he gave me one of them, and he said, "You can have this, Brad. I read your book the night before we stormed Helmand Province, and it was Scottish," and he said, "it's f***ing inspirational." And he lost a lot of his mates that day. And that was the night before the time trial. And I'll never forget that, yeah. And he gave me his coin from his battalion. And yeah, it was phenomenal. It really was.
Wow.
Yeah, and I remember talking about that. And the Olympics is the only thing sporting event that does that.
Yeah.
It makes you realise what's important and it gives you perspective. And I noticed that with everyone who gave an interview at this Olympic Games. Let's hear those interviews now from today's gold, silver and bronze out of the men's time trial.
Look, I gave it everything. Everything was left out there. Everything was left out there at training. Form was good, but I was beaten by two better guys on the day. And
everything pays off.
I'm just glad I got that medal in the end. And yeah, I'm proud. I'm very proud.
How brutal was it, the course?
First lap was quite easy. And then, then the second lap went... It took a long time to catch G.
but you did.
I did eventually, but that second half of the climb out the back was brutal. So that's where Primoz, I think, just absolutely destroyed us both, or all of us. And that's where he definitely won it. So it was just a dogfight between the rest of us. And I was lucky to be on the positive side of that.
You didn't feel bad there in passing Geraint Thomas, teammate?
No, not at all. You've got to give it back to him every now and then. He drops me most times, so I'm glad I could pass and didn't quite drop him, but it was... he's a good teammate. I love working for him, but obviously today is Aussie versus everyone else, so...
Congratulations. I could see the emotion from you when you knew you'd won silver. What was that moment like?
It's super special. I mean, everybody knows that I had a strange year. I was overtrained in the spring, and also mentally I definitely needed to step back to take a helicopter view of my cycling career, about my life, about what I wanted to do in the future. And it was very necessary, useful, and very cool also. I had a really good time, actually. And I refound my love for the bike, for professional cycling. And I set my goals, especially to today, actually. I really wanted to get a medal here and aim for the highest. And... which was a medal for me, maybe not even gold, but I'm super happy with silver. This is a silver medal with a gold touch for me.
Do you think you could have won that medal if you hadn't taken that time off?
Probably not. No. I definitely needed a break, and very happy that I did.
You've won silver before, of course. How does this compare, given the journey that you've been on since then?
This is definitely more special to me. I mean, with my time off, and with my setbacks in the last couple of months, it's very special, this one.
I think the way you've won it as well, so many people are behind you, so many people are cheering for you because of what you've done. Do you hope that maybe this brings that conversation a bit more to the forefront? Or is it just you doing your thing?
Yeah, pretty much, actually. It's me doing my thing, me listening to what I needed at that time, to what I need now. And I don't want to be like a fighter for whatever. I'm taking my decisions in life, and I'm very happy that I did. And I can only encourage everyone not to do the same choices, but yeah, to take to sometimes take a step back and to look at your life, and that's good.
But you're back in love with cycling again.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, super nice, huh? It's beautiful. This thing is quite heavy, actually. I didn't know it, but yeah, for me it's just incredibly nice after all the, let's say, hard things that happened last moments to me, and yeah, it paid off. All the work that we put in from my side, from the family side, from the people all around me, today I managed to win the gold medal and being Olympic champion.
Primo, as you mentioned, the hard times, it feels like you bring us all on this roller coaster of emotions with you, from the crashing out of the Tour de France, the injuries coming into this. I mean, how do you keep your head through all of that?
Yeah, it's super hard, like, especially when you know, the things are not going the way that you would like to. Yes, at the end is always I worked hard, and yeah, I always try to keep believing it, that that still it's me, it's Primož, and yes, everything is always possible every day, and I just went out. I had nothing to lose. I just went all out from kilometer zero and fight for every K, and yeah, managed to come to the finish. So I was, yeah, that was my job, and I did it good. And then the time said it was enough for the gold medal. So I'm super, super pleased with that.
Back home, how does this compare to everyone watching, to winning a Tour de France? How big is an Olympic gold?
It's, you know, in cycling is just stupid to compare all these things. You know, everything is super hard to win. Even your home race behind your house, but every achievement is special, and this one, for sure, for me, is super, super special, and I'm really happy.
But this gold medal has been a long time coming, hasn't it?
Oh. Sometimes I can't believe it. I knew the journey to here was not, I was optimal prepared, but still having a lot of fun. So it was not that I really needed it to as a reward, but it makes it extra beautiful. And also maybe my old story about it started in Rio, more for the people around me that really believed in me, and yeah, that makes it extra beautiful. This is really a gold that shines extra because it started in 2016.
After the road race, did you have to turn your head around and get your head around what happened, or did that become fuel for today?
I think I turned it around fuel, because in the national championships in June, I didn't race too much, but I didn't have really good feeling. So I knew that after I went on training camp on Foscagno, and I had a really good time there. But the road race was for me the first in a race situation that I felt awesome good. And everyone around me was talking about the miscommunication and other stuff. And no one was talking about my performance in the road race. But I closed myself from social media. I didn't check it, but I knew I was in a really good shape. No one was talking about it, but I knew. And so that gave me extra confidence for today.
You said you went into the flow today. You were in the zone. Have you ever ridden, in your head at least, a more perfect time trial?
Oh, I think still it was not perfect. It was not perfect. But I think in the end, it is about pushing power, and I think that's what my preparation was about, to be in my best possible shape. And I think in that way I pushed, in all the perfect moments, I pushed the power.
You've worked so hard for this moment. I know you'll have thought, or maybe allowed yourself to think about this moment. Is it what you wanted it to be? Is this right now, being Olympic champion, what you expected it to feel like?
Oh, I didn't think. Every time when it crossed my mind that I was thinking about the result, I stopped the thoughts, because I was just thinking about my task of today. And I didn't want to think after. I just want... My thoughts were going until the finish line. And I have to say, I worked so hard for it, but actually there's also a lot of work already beforehand with the mechanic of the Dutch national team, Etty van Vught. Shout out to him, because this project started already way before, and actually started already in my former team with Pat Ryan in my Mr. Scott team. He started to believe in my time trial capabilities before I was not a time trialer. So it's a process also that started in 2016. When I joined my Australian team, and I continued, and people believed in me, and yeah, that's the result of today. So shout out to them also. It's also a team performance.
A party now at last. How will you celebrate?
Ooh, for sure I will not sleep. I go in the plane. I think the bus is going at 2 at night, and for sure I will not sleep. But I don't care. I'm Olympic champion.
So that's the road, and of course next week we've got the Velodrome, which is going to be another whole experience for me anyway, going back in there.
You've been into the Velodrome already, what was
in,
it like?
I snuck in into the track centre and met some of the old mechanics. So Alex Jaffrey, who was there since Sydney when I was doing Sydney, Ernie Fairgrave, who, again, I did every Olympics with Ernie, right up to the hour record. Ernie was my mechanic at the hour record. So it was great to see him all actually building the bikes and things like that. And it was lovely to be on that side of the fence without the pressure, because they're working in an intense environment, and I could see that they're building bikes, and the intensity of that was in there already, and I don't miss that one bit.
I was going to ask, is there any bit of all of this that you miss, or you think you will miss, when you're standing in track centre next week?
None of it.
Really, Bradley?
No.
You must have enjoyed it, part of it, though, at the time, no?
Never.
Really?
No. Just the aftermath of it. the box ticking process, that's that done.
Why did you do it?
I don't know. I've never really worked that out.
Truly?
I think it was a need to do it. I don't know why. It wasn't for ego. I think it was almost like a destiny type thing. I felt it was a need to do it. It's why I'm here today. Yeah. So I think it's part of that journey as well for me. If I hadn't done it, I wouldn't have the privilege of doing this now.
Yeah.
So... And I think it helps shape you, the person you become. You have to have those experiences. It humbles you. And I think we saw that a lot today. It makes you grateful for what you do have, including the medals. I have treasured my Olympic medals more than any other race, because it was part of my life. It still is part of my life. I'll probably be at every Olympics now forever because of that history.
Do you think you enjoy the medals more now than
yes.
you did at the time?
It's made me appreciate them more, witnessing what they've done today. I watched Rolich with that medal today, and because it was the same event, I know what that feels like. Yeah.
So what are you looking forward to next week then?
Team Pursuit.
Yeah.
It's where it all started for me when I was 19. The Madison. I was thinking about that today. Me and Rob Hales, both we rode two. We were heading for bronze and he crashed in Sydney. And then we got a bronze 4 years later.
And your Worlds, of course, with Mark.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm just looking forward to that. We're doing BMX tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that should be... That'd be great, because again, I've never been able to witness and watch that up close. And we used to train with those guys in the gym, because they're all under one banner back in the UK.
So yeah.
Do you know, I was looking at the stats, and I'm going to forget them now. I'm going to misremember them because they're in my notes somewhere. It's from research before I came to the Games. But since lottery funding came in, and British cycling is the most successful sport in Team GB, and I think it's 40 medals they've won, which means that you've won almost a quarter of all the medals since lottery funding, and you've won a fifth, I think, of all the golds. Now, if Jason Kenny wins any medal, he joins you as the most decorated Olympian ever. If he wins another gold, he becomes the most successful, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
Laura Kenny, of course, she's sitting on four golds now, isn't she? So she could go to five. But we get so used to, because of your success, because of British cycling success, we get so used to just expecting the medals to come. What do we think realistically is going to happen in terms of medals next
week? Well, I don't think they'll have a massive haul. But I think there'll be individual successes that shine, Laura and Jason being one of them, because they almost come as one. Jason will come away from here as the most decorated. I can't see him not. But that won't be enough for him. It, you know, two bronzes won't be enough for him.
What will it take for Jason to become a Bradley Wiggins or a Chris Hoy? Because he's level with Chris right now. He doesn't have that name.
I don't think
name.
He's interested. Jason's all about performance. And he'll be happy to go home, be happy with Laura and the baby, or the child now. And they're just performers. You know, not everyone wants everything that goes with it. And Jason's as laid back as they come.
Yeah.
And he's one of our greatest athletes. And, you know, he's happy with what he's got, you know.
Team Pursuit, Blue Ribbon. Ed Clancy's still in there.
Ed.
What do you think?
Our greatest ever Team Pursuiter. He's on three, going for number four. I fear for him next week, having heard what the Aussies have been doing in training. But it's the Olympics, and we've got a history of winning there. So we'll see. But that's what's going to be spectacular. There's no form guide. This Olympics has been, I don't know, whatever happens, whoever wins, you know, it's been great to be see it in being the heart of it.
Do you think you'll find yourself cheering in the track centre?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was cheering for Ghana today.
Yeah, you were, yeah.
Gave G a big shout as he came through. Yeah. You gave Tom a shout.
I did. Zit him up, Tom.
And that's what's great about it, is being able to become a fan. And I think that's it for this episode of the Bradley Wiggins Show, sponsored by Zwift, where fun is fast.
You're good at that.
Thank you. Thank you, Orla.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure.
And we'll see you again soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.